Most bankers aren't ready to help you until after their third cup of coffee. But with Central National Bank's after-hours service, you don't have to wait for the bank lobby to open to get help. You can contact us from 6 to 8:30 in the morning or from 5 to 10 in the evening, and we'll connect you to a real, live, local person who can answer questions and fix problems 7 days a week. Bank different. Bank Central. Central National Bank. Member FDIC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is a Rogue Media Network podcast. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Are you drained, bursting with energy? It's at this level because maybe you don't have enough boundaries, less social in the winter. There can be many reasons. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself, and it isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/365 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/365.
This is 365 Sports, powered by Sikkim365.com.
Greg Wrubell, voice of BYU Athletics, joins us on 365 Sports with Paul Craig, and I'm David Smoke. Greg, thank you very much. When the Mark Pope story popped in Kentucky because of how Kentucky was looking, and it looked like they were like a little bit flailing, and then all of a sudden go back to the captain of a championship team, did you think BYU could recover and have who they have as quickly as they did?
Well, it took Scott Drew and others saying no to set the wheels in motion. Had Scott Drew or Danny Hurley or Nate Oates or anybody else said yes, we wouldn't be talking today about this. But it got to Mark Pope, and after being told no more than a few times, they wanted a yes. And they got the biggest possible yes they could get by bringing in a former player who holds that out as his dream job. So once it got past Scott Drew, I knew that it was a fait accompli. I absolutely knew that Mark Pope would be the next guy they go to, because they had to get somebody that wanted the job, really wanted the job. And that certainly applies to Mark. So, again, once it got past Scott Drew, it was all she wrote. Now, that said, Tom Holmoe said this morning it was two minutes after he hung up the phone with Mitch Barnhart that he was pursuing Kevin Young. They went one place and one place only for their guy, and they got their guy. And it's hard to argue that BYU could have done any better in a very quick and qualified coaching search than to get the highest paid current assistant in the NBA.
Greg, yeah, going NBA route too, does that open doors that maybe have not been there also for BYU, especially in this new era of NIL and everything else? I saw Tom's video as well talking about donating to the NIL fund.
Right. Well, he's got certainly the connections that he hopes to lean on and can lean on. And I think as much as just having the ties and having the ability to have someone like a Chris Paul or a Devin Booker or someone like Kevin Durant, share some thoughts with him and or his team that could possibly benefit the program moving forward. He also has a brother that has been as close in the high school recruiting circles as anybody over the last number of years, and has an interesting connection that way. But when you coach as long as Kevin Young has, and he's still pretty young, he's only 42. He's done it at the college level. He started off in college coaching, and then it's been with the pros for so long But he, you know, you establish ties that that reach far and wide in the world of basketball, whether it's pro or collegiate. But there's no doubt that there will be some sort of connection in the professional ranks that will pay off for BYU moving forward.
Greg, I mean, I think it's kind of a, you know, a big point of just the faith aspect of this all. I mean, just how much does that make this whole transition and the ability to embrace and kind of wrap your arms around a guy when he has that personal connection, that spiritual connection with so much of the BYU faithful?
Well, and by the way, I was impressed by the spiritual connection Scott Drew referenced.
Yes.
When it came time to recommit to Baylor. It's important, right? It's important to a lot of people out there, and Scott Drew's one of them. And now it's not a policy at BYU, but it is practice at BYU mm-hmm. that the highest profile coaches, football and men's basketball, have always been members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so if that's going to be one of your starting points, the coaching recruiting pool is always fairly shallow, relatively speaking, to any other school in the country. And so, you know, Kevin Young was certainly at the top of that list among qualified coaches who share the faith.
So one of the things I noticed is that, you know, when you just brought that up, you and Craig, but the process itself sometimes can be elongated, and that BYU reacted maybe quicker with the process of who they would interview or how they would go through the process of that. How much do you think that helped? And that also how much they're spending, because this is a commitment, and how much to being a part of the Big 12, does that help as well?
Yeah, there are certain procedural steps you have to go through at BYU that require leadership approval at the highest levels of the church. But as Tom Homel referenced this morning, there are exceptions to the timeline rule. And so a typical timeline for an average university hire might be much more elongated than what they had to do with Kevin Young. But they had to do it because that's the environment BYU is operating in now, relative to the portal and everything else, and the fact that he's in the NBA playoffs. There was a lot going on that had to get done rather quickly. So it was different for BYU in terms of timeline, for sure. It's different for BYU in terms of financial resources. If the reports we're reading are accurate, this is more than BYU's ever paid for a coach. And certainly the term, the initial term, 7 years, also is unprecedented. And so there are a lot of things about this search that show that BYU is prepared to operate at a different level, with the Big 12 being just a part of that environment you described.
Can you describe the on-campus, around the athletic department reaction when that was solidified?
Everyone's thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And it was a pretty big mood swing because you had a successful coach who had some momentum rolling and left for a job that he clearly preferred over BYU. And that could take the wind out of some sails. And for a couple of days of silence and searching, of course, the administration was actively searching, but a couple of days of silence and to wait and to wonder, you know, and knowing where the coaching pool was and who might be the names they're talking to land Kevin Young is a best case scenario, and has totally energized and re-energized this fan base, which was already pretty high octane to begin with. It was a pretty successful year when you pick to finish 13th in the Big 12 and you finish fifth. And you get to the NCAA tournament, you don't want to backslide. You don't want to lose that momentum. I think what Kevin Young does is give you the chance to keep the ball rolling.
So spring football now, you know, of course, we're getting to the end of that for everybody. How do you feel that the team has come together and shown some different things, as hard as it is to tell what's really going on in spring football?
Yeah, BYU spring football wrapped up a couple of weeks ago, actually. They're one of the first to do it and wrap it up. And the big storyline was the quarterback position, as it is a lot of schools, but BYU's gone on to a lot of springs and summers recently with a pretty established pecking order, and it wasn't that case this year. So that was what people were looking for, was Jerry Bohannon coming in, a former Baylor quarterback, as you're well aware. Jerry Bohannon coming in, what can he do? What can he do to compete with to Jake Retzlaff? Now, Jake had the reps last year, came in as a replacement for Keaton Slovis, didn't have a lot of success. But there was a lot of novelty around him, and I think they expected to be better this year. And how much can Jerry push him? How healthy is Jerry after all of his previous issues? And so I should say Gary. And so that becomes the big story: is the Bohannon Retzlaff competition. Where does that end up once we really get going in August?
Talking to Greg Wrubell, voice of BYU Athletics on 365 Sports.
Greg, where do you have your most questions right now? I mean, obviously, it's it's just spring ball. We don't want to like overstate the importance of it. It's a great development time, but there is still this whole portal window that's about to come. I know things can be a bit more unique for BYU, but just where do you sort of sit on a year in the books, knowing the changes that have already occurred, and kind of just what are you expecting to, I guess, see ironed out here over the coming months as we kind of go quiet a little bit?
Well, I'll underline quarterback again. That'll be the headline competition in August. And then defensive line, they put a lot of offseason eggs in the defensive line basket. And I think that's where they felt they needed to make the most improvement. Jay Hill, as a defensive coordinator, did a lot for BYU in year one. What they didn't get out of Jay's scheme was the kind of disruption that his scheme requires out of the front four. And so I want to see what that D4 looks like in August on the defensive end, and who among Bohannon and Retzloff emerges and how quickly they do on the offensive side.
Greg, we just had Rhett Lashley on at SMU, and they're about to join the ACC. One of the things that Kalani had talked about with us, as good as BYU has been in the schedule that they played, the national brand, there's still a transition period. Did you notice that last year, and what was the part that you noticed the most?
What I noticed the most and how it showed itself was how the grind of a 10-game P5 schedule affected BYU. Let's not forget, BYU was 5-2 at one point last year, and they did not win again. So they lost their last five games, and the attrition was real. The wear down was real. Once they lost Keaton Slovis, and that was a big hit. We can't just gloss over the fact that their starting quarterback was gone for much of the latter part of the season, and you had to bring in a kid with no Division I experience. That plays into it, certainly. But I thought year one of the grind showed just how tough P5 football can be. And BYU had an introduction to it at a lower level, guys. As an independent, you could schedule those four or five and six Power 5 teams, maybe seven per year, but you didn't have 10. And to have it week in, week out, and play that schedule, I think, showed itself by the end. That said, disappointing finish, right? You're targeted for a bowl game at 5-2, and you don't get to the postseason. So, hugely disappointing way to end it, and losing two games at the very end to OU at home and in Stillwater that were winnable games for BYU. And that kind of added to it, the fact they were so close. And if you can get to the postseason in your first year in the Big 12 in football, you've got a really strong stepping stone and springboard the year two, much like basketball in their first year in the Big 12 got to the NCAA tournament, and it was right there for BYU, but they couldn't quite grab it.
When Mark Pope announced he was leaving for Kentucky, which made, as you mentioned earlier, all the sense in the world at that point, were there any hard feelings, or was obvious, oh my God, he has to go back to where he's from?
Well, I think everybody expected that if and when the Kentucky job opened, he'd be a candidate for it. I think the expectation was that it would be a few years from now, after he had done bigger and better things at BYU. And as it turned out, it was a narrow window, and it opened thanks to guys like Scott Drew staying put. Mm-hmm. And once that happened, the process was accelerated. I mean, you wouldn't expect a guy with no NCAA tournament wins and no first place finishes in a conference to be the guy at Kentucky. But because of the circumstances, he was that guy. Now, if you've given him another 5, 6, 7 years here at BYU, maybe you are talking about tournament wins and contending for a conference championship. That makes him a more natural pick at that time, because clearly, his resume doesn't match what the previous Kentucky coaches had going into Lexington. But it was a different scenario. It was a timing thing. It was a kind of save face thing. Get a guy that's a hard yes. And it all worked out that way. Again, Kentucky was going to be something for him because he played there, won a national title there. He said that all of his ADs that he's worked for and associate ADs have known that Kentucky was kind of that dream job for him. So not unexpected, but the timeline certainly was.
Kevin Young has been praised everywhere you could go, from those who know him, coached with him, played with him, obviously with Devin Booker, Chris Paul, among others. I think it's awesome. Doug Hallard, I saw you retweet a profile on him in the athletic.com. It was really cool to see all the things that were said about him. Greg, thank you very much for your time. I'm glad that you were very kind to me when I reached out to you and I was trying to get a hold of what I thought, I didn't know, just some big BYU alum that owns the Utah Jazz in Ryan Smith. And I said, hey, do you have any way I could contact him? And thank you for being kind, sir. Thank you very much. You're not telling me I'm
an
idiot.
No, there are some guys that are tougher to reach than others. and I know Ryan, we have a good relationship, but his plate's really full right now for obvious reasons.
We'll hit him up on Instagram. It'll be fine.
Right. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it turns out Ryan Smith's taking a lot of things out of Arizona right now.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Great stuff, Greg. Congratulations. Thanks for your time. Greg Wrubell, been a go-to for us, along with others, when it comes to covering BYU and the coaching hire of Kevin Young.
This has been a Rogue Media Network production.